This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
2014 was the third worst year on record for forest fires in BC. Last year was one of the worst in a decade, and this year forest fires have started so early that BC was compelled to turn down Alberta's request for help. Alberta is, of course, dealing with horrendous wildfire around Fort McMurray. Is global warming playing a role in this sudden upsurge of wildfires? Although no single event can be definitively linked to global warming, the trends are clear. Forest fires, retreating glaciers, melting ice caps, rising sea levels, dying coral reefs. The grim list goes on. The Earth is being degraded by carbon emissions. This is the impetus behind the LEAP Manifesto. It is a work of a broad coalition of Canadians, and it is intended to try and meet the immense challenge of climate change. Joining us to discuss the LEAP Manifesto is Christopher Micah. Christopher Micah is an ecologist, environmentalist, policy analyst, and writer. Hello, Christopher.
Hi, Esther.
Christopher, can you just remind us, broadly speaking, what is the LEAP Manifesto?
Well, it came out in August of last year in the early parts of the election campaign, and it was the result of a whole group of people, environmentalists, social activists, people interested in environmental justice, in Aboriginal justice, in justice for women, who got together and started thinking about the intersectionality of all of these issues and really, you know, conceived of a political manifesto that would link all of these together and you know, embark on a whole different way of running a country, running the world, and running a government. And the notion of it when it was released last year was to serve, as it has come to serve now, I think, to some extent, as a departure point for a discussion about these issues. You know, how can we move away from a carbon economy? How can we move away from an exploitative way of dealing with not only the environment, but with, you know, our indigenous groups, you know, the economy, the disenfranchised, and reconceive of a different model of working.
One of the groups that was engaged in this discussion around the LEAP Manifesto is the NDP. They discussed it at length at their recent convention. Can you tell us what happened exactly there?
Well, yes, there was some degree of discussion last August during the election campaign. The Green Party at the time, I believe, I don't know if they formally endorsed it, but they said that this would be something that you know, they strongly support. And then more recently, this spring at the NDP's annual convention in Edmonton, there was actually a number of constituency associations, as I understand it, brought this forward, the LEAP Manifesto, you know, as I guess it's a way of sort of getting the party to think, you know, more about embracing its social democratic and progressive roots and aspirations. And so there was a great deal of discussion at the party convention. By a show of hands, finally, it was adopted by about a two-thirds majority. And it wasn't, you know, the idea of it, of adopting the motion, was to initiate a discussion over the next two-year period of how to integrate these principles of the LEAP Manifesto, you know, more broadly, you know, into the NDP's political program. And in 2 years' time, this will come back, you know, to another policy convention, and there'll be some, you know, further consideration of this.
One of the responses I read to that was, a good way of saying no without saying no is that we'll discuss it. Is that what happened here?
Not really, in the sense that there never really was, there wasn't a motion on the table to sort of adopt this lock, stock, and barrel. And there's the idea is that the LEAP Manifesto is a kind of high-order set of values and aspirations. And the notion then would be, how do these actually percolate their way down into specific NDP policy, you know, proposals, ideas for legislation or for what the party would propose, you know, were it to be elected. And, you know, there is always the danger that, you know, that a discussion might just, you know, lead nowhere or get mothballed or something like that. But I think really it's the intelligent and healthy thing for the party to do is really to initiate a real discussion. And at the same time, you know, in conjunction with questions of leadership of the NDP, there has been a lot of discussion within the party, you know, regarding the last election and how the NDP was perceived, in fact, did do very poorly. It lost a tremendous number of, you know, seats. And is that a signal to the NDP that if it wants to be a meaningful force on the Canadian political landscape, you know, does it have to, you know, rethink where it's going as a political party? So I think it's a, you know, we'll see what happens in 2 years' time, but I think it's an entirely healthy kind of discussion or initiative, rather, to launch a discussion around all of these issues of social justice, of economic justice, of environmental justice, and see how the party's platform can be adjusted accordingly.
What do you think is the biggest misunderstanding about LEAP?
Well, I think there are probably two main reasons that you know, the people have responded negatively to this. On the one hand, there are people who you know, correctly perceive that this will be a threat to the political and economic and social status quo. That this is, if not revolutionary, it is, you know, a leap. A number of people have termed it as radical. You know, if it's radical, it's only because over these past four decades, neoliberal thinking has so dominated political discourse, not just in, you know, Canada, but really throughout the world. So the notion really that nothing much can be done and that at best, what we can do is sort of incrementally move forward to make, you know, itsy-bitsy little changes to our social and political and environmental fabric. And I think, you know, in part, the Paris Climate Change Conference in November really made people sit up and think and realize that, you know, this is no joke, climate change, and that the treaty or this framework agreement that was negotiated there was really the last possible opportunity for us to tackle this issue before our goose is literally and figuratively cooked. So, you know, there certainly are forces in this society that think that tackling climate change and making, you know, fairly radical adjustments to our, you know, social and political and economic structure is just off, you know, out of the possibility of consideration, you know, and so people react accordingly and try and sort of categorize the LEAP Manifesto as Margaret Wente did in the Globe and Mail, saying that it just wants to send people back to eating, you know, moldy, rotten, you know, potatoes, and that this is a construct of people who are kind of, you know, dreamy thinkers and don't really understand how to run an economy. So there's, you know, there's certainly that response. There's also some response, I think, that really comes out of not actually having read the LEAP Manifesto or at least thought about it in any depth. It's not that difficult. It's, you know, only 15 points and each one is a sentence or two. And in fact, although the sort of lightning rod in terms of some of the debate has come around this issue of moving away from pipelines and fossil fuel infrastructure, nonetheless, the LEAP Manifesto actually touches on a wide range of issues having to do with Aboriginal justice and women's rights and you know, political reform and social justice, and really and developing an understanding that all of these are tremendously linked. So I think those two sort of forces combined together in some amount of negative feedback. Although what's tremendously interesting, I have to say, is ECOS Politics just released a poll this past week, which looked across Canada. And what's phenomenal is that amongst Green Party supporters, New Democratic Party supporters, Liberal Party supporters, and Bloc Québécois supporters, a majority of people support the Leak Manifesto. In fact, in each instance, twice as many people support the Leak Manifesto as oppose it. So 59% for the Greens, 54% for NDP, 50% for the Liberals. The sole exception to this, widespread support for the Leak Manifesto is amongst Conservative Party members, where 62% of people oppose it versus 20% that support it. So what's interesting, even as kind of a, as an overarching framework agreement as it is, it's, and within a very short period of time, I have to say that a tremendous number of people, have either read it or thought about it to the degree that they actually feel that they support where this is taking us.
Yeah, you've mentioned a few people like Margaret Wente and others who are criticizing the Leap Manifesto, and Alberta's Premier Rachel Notley has also criticized it, calling it naive. The most common critique is around the damage it will do to the economy. Does that criticism have validity?
Well, I would say certainly not anymore. There was a time, and the particular lightning rod of criticism, even though the Leap Manifesto doesn't specifically talk about pipelines, it does talk about developing not developing fossil fuel infrastructure. That has been taken to mean, pipelines. And there was a time, I'd say 2.5-3 years ago, when here was the problem. There was a tremendous amount of oil being produced in the United States in the Bakken oil formations and in other places. The pipeline capacity leading from those oil fields to the refineries on the Gulf Coast was effectively, clogged. The oil that comes from Alberta, which is significantly what they call heavier and more sour as opposed to light and sweet oil. In other words, it needs quite a bit more refining and it's also more, distant, was being sold at a significant discount. The price differential between what's called Western Canada Select and West Texas Intermediate ranged in the vicinity of around $30. So there was a tremendous pressure to create, what they call access to tidewater. In other words, a pipeline that would take it, to the coast where there was the hope that it would command higher prices. Since that time, things have changed tremendously. Even without the construction of Keystone XL, which has been vetoed by President Obama, both Enbridge and TransCanada have actually opened up greater pipeline capacity within the United States, moving some of the American crude oil to Gulf Coast refineries. So now, in fact, there's about a 500,000 barrel a day excess in pipeline capacity in the United States. And the price differential between Western Canadian Select, which is the tar sands oil, and West Texas Intermediate was recently down to 30 cents to a dollar or something like that. So now there's really, there's nothing to be gained. And, of course, the price of oil has declined very dramatically from over $100, a barrel to these days, in the mid-40s or something like that. So at this point, there actually is no economic argument for building more fossil fuel infrastructure. What exists there is serving perfectly well. In fact, there's a surfeit of capacity. So right now, this would, for example, not building a pipeline, any pipeline, either south, west, or east, would not impact Alberta's economy in the least.
And looking towards the future, if in general the idea of Leap Manifesto is to move away from this fossil fuel economy, how do they propose to meet that economic challenge?
Well, the great interest, of course, is in renewable energy. And one of the fascinating things about renewable energy is that there's been a tremendous, a huge development of renewable energy. There's an international organization called the International Renewable Energy Agency, IRENA, which has been tracking the growth of renewable energy jobs, which have been growing, well, in the last 5 years have grown 144%, so 29%, you know, a year, which is a phenomenal rate of growth. I mean, there's probably no other sector anywhere in any country, in any economy that's growing as quickly as that. The most recent report, which looked at numbers from 2015, found almost 9 million people employed directly in different renewable energy sectors. So that's just direct employment, not spin-off and not, you know, indirect employment. And growing tremendously rapidly, and in fact, given the commitments at the Paris Climate Change, you know, conference, one will expect that that growth will, you know, increase, you know, even more quickly. It's also important to note that many of the kinds of skills that people have, you know, working in the oil patch, are readily transferable to renewable energy sectors. You know, if you want to develop, you know, wind power, you have to have people who are, you know, have to erect, you know, towers, install generators, you know, build transmission lines, build highways, do environmental impact, you know, assessments. If you're interested in geothermal energy, you need people who can drill, you know, wells, who can install pipelines. So in terms of moving some of the jobs, because, of course, people are rightly concerned, you know, that you know, if you have a home, if you have a home anymore in Fort McMurray, or you know, if you have a family or if you have a career in an area, how are you going to adapt? Well, in fact, many of the skills are readily adaptable, and this is a you know, a sector that's growing very rapidly. And to the degree, for example, that the Canadian and, you know, Alberta and Saskatchewan and other provincial governments can actually, you know, assist in terms of training and retraining workers, this is what Stephen Lewis called, you know, a Marshall Plan of employment for the 21st century. It really, you know, it promises to bear enormous economic fruit. And so it's greatly in the interest of all our economies, you know, provincial economies in Alberta and Newfoundland and Saskatchewan and Canadian economy, to be on the forefront of that, developing the technology which not only, you know, enables us to create that renewable energy sector, you know, here, but can, you know, create technology which can be, you know, exported. So lots of opportunities.
Well, Christopher, thank you so much for joining us this morning and continuing the debate and discussion.
My great pleasure. Thanks for having me there.
I've been speaking with Christopher Micah. He is an ecologist, environmentalist, policy analyst, and writer. His most recent article is Misunderstanding the Leap, and you can find that article at rabble.ca.